With those introductions made, I will now call our second case for this afternoon, 99-3328 State v. Oakley. And I have marked here that Mr. Timothy T. Kay of Brookfield, Wisconsin will represent Mr. Oakley. Mr. Kay.
Good afternoon, Justices. It's a privilege to address you in this wonderful new building. And we're here today for these oral arguments on two main issues, which we briefed in our documents. The first issue is whether a probationer's fundamental right to procreate should be limited as set forth by the Circuit Court's judgment of conviction. Secondly, there's another issue regarding enforcement of a prior plea bargain. If that is withdrawn after the entry of a plea, and then a subsequent plea is entered to that, and whether there is an issue pertaining to that. There's a third issue that we outlined briefly regarding transferring prisoners out of state, but essentially we recognize that that is moot by the operation of the Court of Appeals decision. So with that understanding, the basic facts in this case are pretty straightforward and not contested. In May of 1998, Mr. Oakley was charged with 7 felony counts of child non-support. Mr. Oakley had 9 children from 4 different women, and in the trial court records, there was documents that show that Mr. Oakley owed some $25,000, apparently for past child support, arrearages, state arrearages, lying in expenses, blood tests, court costs, etc. Faced with those charges, all Class D felonies with the repeater attached to each one, Mr. Oakley apparently entered into a plea agreement, and on August of 1998, he entered a plea of no contest to one of the counts. The other 6 were read in. Part of the plea agreement called for a joint recommendation of 8 years prison stayed for 5 years of probation. Shortly after that plea was entered, and prior to the time of sentencing, about 2 weeks later, September of 1998, the state became aware that Mr. Oakley had other problems in Sheboygan County. Apparently, his probation was being revoked, and the DA had second thoughts about recommending probation to the court. And also, there were some other problems with Mr. Oakley in Sheboygan County, which stems from case 2000-37, which was before your honors about a year ago. Mr. Oakley objected strenuously to the withdrawal of the plea and the plea bargain. That issue was briefed to the trial court, and over his objections, the circuit court judge allowed the state to withdraw its offer. And faced with those circumstances, then Mr. Oakley, understanding that consequences were much more grave, entered into a second plea arrangement wherein he entered pleas to 3 counts. 4 were dismissed. The state was going to recommend 6 years consecutive, which was substantially more, obviously substantially more than the prior probation recommendation, and was detrimental to his interests. Also in that plea arrangement, he was supposed to and theoretically waived his right to complain on appeal about the first plea being withdrawn. And as we all know, a plea arrangement or a plea bargain is critical in a defendant's analysis of a case, because we all know that circuit court judges pay great deference to what the state recommends. So Mr. Oakley needed to know what he was facing when he appeared before the judge, and that gave him the rise for the second plea arrangement. Judge Fred Hazelwood then sentenced him to, on count 1, for 3 years prison consecutive to a previous sentence that he was serving in Sheboygan, which was more than the first plea agreement. And then the second and third counts, 8 years prison stay for 5 years probation, which is the same. But then the judge in the judgment of conviction had it entered by the clerks. Defendant is ordered not to have any further children while on probation unless it can be shown to the court that he is meeting the needs of his other children and can meet the needs of this one. In other words, the judge, circuit court judge, put himself squarely in the position to be the monitor of a probationer's sexual activity or a probationer's right to procreate. In the trial...
Now, there was no bar to sexual activity.
There is none in the judgment of conviction, correct.
But could the judge have more narrowly drawn this? Do you have any... Because as the chief indicated, there's no bar on sexual activity, but what other mission in this area could the judge have used rather than the procreation?
Well, I've seen it in the past where judges have made it as a condition of probation of whom individuals live with. He could have prohibited Mr. Oakley, for example, living with one of the four women that he had associations with in the past, or maybe not, or limiting him not to live with a woman, I suppose.
Maybe unless he married her.
Unless he married, sure. So that would be something I could imagine.
That doesn't deal with the children. What if he said, and I'll ask this to Mr. Balistrieri too, what if he said, before you have a sexual relationship with a woman, you ought to come to me and bring her, and I'm going to advise her, or you can phrase it differently, you are to advise her that you have had 9 children with 4 different women, and that you have failed to support them to the tune of, what did you say, $25,000?
Correct.
And that she should be, and maybe there's even more, but at least that's what we know now, she should be advised that should she have children, the chances of your not supporting them are good. Hi.
On a practical level, that certainly would make sense.
But doesn't that fit almost what the judge did in, was it the Krebs case?
Well, in the Krebs case, that defendant was charged and convicted of sexual assault.
Right.
And I think the judge in that case wanted to be sure that that particular defendant did not engage in similar type of activity and prohibited that defendant, Mr. Krebs, from engaging in sexual activity unless he cleared it with his PO, probation agent. But in the Krebs case, also in the head notes and in the language right after the holding of the case, there is reference to the fact that so long as the court does not limit his right to procreate, that impingement of his constitutional right to have sexual activity is okay under the facts of that case.
Well, that's what I did. I got a narrower order than this trial judge did, and I didn't stop procreation. What's the matter with the order I would have entered?
I don't know. I think
you'll take it at the moment better than the one that was entered here, I
guess.
Yes,
I think that would give him an opportunity to at least address certain concerns with the court and appease his agent's concerns as well as the court's concerns.
You're not going to defend your client in failing to pay for child support, are you?
No.
You're not going to say he did right?
I'm not.
By any of the women or by the children or by the state?
No, that is not my position, and that's not what I've advocated.
Mr. Kay, on page 11 of your brief, you seem to concede somewhere in the middle of that first paragraph. In this case, it is very clear that Oakley does not, cannot, and probably will never have the ability to properly support children. Now, based upon that admission, is it your argument, it seems to be your argument, that the state cannot do anything about this with respect to Mr. Oakley having children? If he wants to have children, despite your admission that he can't support them, that is his fundamental right, and the state cannot restrict that.
Well, the state has unlimited resources in other avenues to protect children's interests and to obtain arrearages and pay child support. But it's our position that because procreation is a fundamental constitutional right, which is derived from the 14th Amendment, Due Process Clause, as well as Article 1, Section 1 of the Wisconsin Constitution, that the pursuit of liberty and the privacy definitions attached to that, fundamentally, a circuit court judge shall not abridge or impinge upon that constitutional right.
So what if, in this case, the judge would have imposed a condition of probation that he obtained, that Mr. Oakley obtained permission from his probation agent before he could procreate a child? Would that be okay?
No, that would be putting the probation agent in the same position as a judge, and then...
But in Krebs, we said that it was okay, didn't we, with respect to sexual activity?
Well, because it was narrowly construed for a person who had some sexual deviant history, who was a sexual assaulter. And the downside of all this is that if he does engage in that constitutionally protected right, the ultimate penalty will be revocation of his probation. He will be sentenced to prison for 8 years. And that, we just strongly believe, is unjust.
Mr. Kay, don't you think the state in this situation has a compelling state interest, that state interest to be sure that children are supported by their parents?
Absolutely. But
doesn't that override the right of your client to procreate?
I don't think it overrides. I think the analysis needs to
be... That right isn't an absolute right. It is a qualified right, is it not?
That's correct.
And you don't think that the duty of support is significant in regard to whether or not you should exercise that right or be able to?
Yes, the duty of support, but not to go one step further or one step backwards and say that you not have the right to have further children. The state can have wage assignments, child support orders, work search orders, liens, as talked about in the Zablocki case, Zablocki versus Redhall. The U.S. Supreme Court addressed a statute which was repealed in Wisconsin many years ago, but basically the language of the case still holds. And in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that a statute or that allowed a judge to grant or deny a marriage license based upon a person's ability to pay, for example, a paternity defendant or a second-time married person who has a prior child, to give that kind of authority to a circuit court judge was improper under the 14th Amendment. And it's the Blocky, the court further commented that if that was the case, that the state needed to protect children's interests, which the state should, the state can do things such as wage assignment, contempt process, criminal proceedings like this, 948-22 felony non-support, guy doesn't pay, and it's been outstanding for more than 120 days, you know, you can put him in prison for 2 years.
So is your argument that this condition is not tightly drawn enough, but it's too broad a condition?
It's way too broad. And I can't imagine how you can limit I don't know how to make it tighter or narrower than what it is. I think it's just overly just too broad the way it's drafted.
Well, the case law talks about conditions that are relevant to the crime, and certainly this seems to be relevant to the crime of non-support. And the cases also seem to tie into the idea that it has to be relevant to rehabilitation. And doesn't it appear to be a relevant condition in regard to rehabilitation as well?
My view would be that it may not go that far as being relevant to his rehabilitation, but also under the goals of probation, there are two goals, two objectives. One is to rehabilitate the defendant. Second goal is to make sure that society's interests are protected. In other words, to deter crime and to procreate and to take away that right. that is not a crime. That is not a criminal activity. So the two objectives of probation, watching over this, would not be furthered. So I would disagree that, respectfully disagree that as a condition of probation, that probation would be furthered by this condition.
One of the things that's perplexing to me is that the order does not limit sexual intercourse. The order limits procreation. So playing this out, if with another woman, he has sexual intercourse, and she becomes pregnant, is the only alternative that there be an abortion, or he go to prison for 8 years, or what happens? I mean, is that the play out of this?
Well, certainly he would be facing a very serious violation of his probation. He more than likely would be revoked, and the sentence is already in place. He would go to prison for 8 years. The abortion component, that's, you know, something between the mother and...
He could support the children.
Excuse me?
He could support the children.
He could be ordered to pay child support, correct, and take on the responsibility of a tenth child.
Well, if he pays for this new child, does he comply with this order? And then if he doesn't pay for the other nine? Now, some of them are growing up, so they're going to be out of it, but there's still a potential. He doesn't pay for the other nine. Is that going to still make him in violation of the court order?
Yes, because it just simply says that he is in violation of that condition of probation unless he goes back to that circuit court judge, Judge Hazelwood, and asks to be relieved from that. It would be a motion to the court to modify, or a petition, or order shall cause why he should not be...
Yeah, so he has to show ability to support the new child and consistent in his support of children he already has.
Correct.
So he's got to be able to support them all before he has a child.
So potentially the way to get around or out of this would be for him to have that ability, or win the lottery, or come into an inheritance or something, to have the monetary availability of supporting all of the children.
Right, and that, I think, as a practical matter, it's unlikely.
But with his, I guess looking at the record, his work history, he has not supported these children, I gather, for a long period of time, correct? That's replete in the record.
Correct.
That's why the judge, from what I could see, came to this this decision, which you call draconian, or at least feel that it's unconstitutional.
Correct.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think also, just one other sharp point to add is, I think Judge Hazelwood is also familiar with Mr. Oakley. If you, in the record, according to the criminal complaint filed by the state, they reference other divorce matters and the paternity judgments involving Mr. Oakley, and ironically, of three of those four involving the women here, Judge Hazelwood was the judge that approved those documents.
Well, that would give rise to the quote reasonability of this. I'm looking at page 10 of your opponent's brief, footnote 2, where it says this was not Oakley's only problem. As the Court of Appeals noted, and I'm just, Oakley also refused to pay his fines, letting them remain outstanding for years. He also intimidated one of his children and another witness when he was charged with abusing the child.
Mm-hmm.
So all that was known, if I'm not incorrect, by Judge Hazelwood at the time?
Yes, I believe so.
Mr. K?
Yes, Judge.
The analysis, of course, as you well know, is assuming strict scrutiny, is that first of all, we must
the state must establish a compelling state interest. And that the way they choose to do so is a substantially effective method for achieving that. And lastly, the method chosen must be the least onerous alternative available. Are you conceding the first two of those? Do you concede this is a compelling state interest? And secondly, that the method chosen was... And I'm trying to figure out where our battleground is. If I'm going to write this, do I have to write it on all three? Are you challenging all three, or two of them, or one of them?
All three.
I think you think the state does not have a compelling state interest, Gerald?
The state does not have a compelling state interest to regulate or monitor procreation in any probationer, defendant, or any other citizen. The dangerousness of allowing that condition to arise could be that it could apply to all other.
Could I follow up and then proceed, Justice Babbitt? Mm-hmm. Are you saying the right to procreate in the Constitution of the United States is absolute?
Yes. It is fundamental. And contained in the privacy.
It's absolute outside of marriage.
Well, yes.
Irrespective of age.
Not for minors. Not minors. I'm talking about adults. There are certain laws that prohibit
but there used to be laws on fornication. I think that is what Justice Presser may be driving at. So unmarried people who engage in sexual activity could be criminally prosecuted.
Could be, and almost all of those have been overturned, or if they're still in the books, they're simply not enforced.
Mr. Kay, maybe I misunderstood you, but I thought several minutes ago when I was asking you some questions that you conceded that the right to procreate was not an absolute right, but rather was a qualified right. Are you backing off of that? You're telling us now you think it's an absolute right?
Yes, I'm sorry. I believe that's the correct way of analyzing this. That this is a fundamental absolute right that...
The state has no interest in controlling that right?
Well, they may have an interest to help put into place things to make sure that people are responsible for their decision to procreate, but the state should not be in the business of monitoring that business.
It sounds to me like you're using the term absolute right in the nature that we use the phrase fundamental right. I mean, there
yes.
is no absolute constitutional right. Constitutional rights can be infringed upon by the state, provided the procedural protections in the Constitution are followed. Constitutional rights can be waived. They can be forfeited. There is no absolute constitutional right. I think from what it sounds like, your argument is this is a fundamental right.
Correct.
And it's subject to the highest level of constitutional scrutiny. And as I understand your argument, it's basically that this restriction on this fundamental constitutional right subject to the highest level of constitutional scrutiny is not narrowly tailored. That's what I understand to be the heart of your argument. Is that wrong?
No, that's essentially correct. I didn't mean to mislead the other justices, but...
But you see, I think you got off your track by saying that there was no compelling state interest. And then you indicated the compelling state interest was regulating procreation. I think the compelling state interest here is, if there is such a compelling state interest, the state's interest in protecting children and getting them supported.
And
then the
that.
Issue.
Yes.
And you said that. And it's a good idea since today is Law Day and the theme of Law Day is in the best interests of children. So it's appropriate we handle this case today.
Okay.
So you got the compelling state interest is support of children, protection of children. You would agree with that. So then the question is this regulation narrowly tailored, as Justice Sykes said, to serve this compelling state interest, right?
Yep. If if that's the question, I would. I don't think it's. I still think it's too broad.
You think this prohibition is too broad?
Correct.
Just to add to the. Hypothetical, suppose you had a religious prohibition on restricting procreation. How would this provision play out? Would you claim a First Amendment right?
I'm not following. If there was in a condition of probation, if there was...
No, suppose that there was a religious belief that one should not use contraceptives. Therefore, any time one had intercourse, there was a possibility of a child. And that saying, you can't have children, in effect means that you can't have any sexual relations, and that all of that violates the exercise of religion.
Well, same thing. I don't think that the state has any business trying to regulate or impose those kinds of rules on religious activity and...
Is sterilization a more narrow restriction?
We did cite several cases regarding that issue, the Skinner versus Oklahoma case, talked about that. My time is up.
You can answer the question.
Thank you. The Skinner versus Oklahoma case we cited in our brief talked about defendants having a vasectomy if they were deemed to be at a certain level of felony convictions, I think third timers. And in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court threw that restriction out, saying that it was unconstitutional.
What about brother and sister?
Brother and sister?
Yeah, adults. You said there was, it was not an absolute right if it involved minors. What about brother and sister? Both are adults.
Well, there's statutes prohibiting, incest and things of that nature, so that would come into play.
Is the difference here simply that there wasn't a statute passed? I mean, how do we articulate the compelling state interest? Does it have to be articulated in statute as opposed to a decision by a judge?
Well, that could be a good starting place. At least we would... have something to work with, but to allow circuit court judges to make it up, so to speak, is legislating from the bench, and I think the abuse could just be too far reaching. It could apply to all defendants of these kinds of convictions, and it's a difficult issue. I mean, we all concede, we all want what's best for kids, we want to have child support obligations paid, things of that nature, but to have a judge regulate a defendant's procreation, I think, is too far. It's too hard to monitor, it's too hard to administer fairly, and then the dangerousness is that it could be expanded to other groups, minorities, and things of that nature. So,
thank you, Mr. Kay. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Balestrieri, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you. May it please the court. You asked a question of me, even though I wasn't up speaking, and I will immediately address that question. And I will also address a comment that Justice Babich made. Justice Babich, you indicated that the condition of probation has to be the most narrow. I don't read the case law to say that. I read the case law to say that the condition has to be narrowly tailored, but not necessarily the most narrow conceivable. It just has to be reasonably narrow given the circumstances, as I understand the case law in this area. Given that as the premise, then, Justice Abrahamson, your question was what if there was a condition of probation that the defendant was to tell any woman with whom he associated that he had 9 kids already and didn't support any of them and wasn't likely to support any children he was likely to have with her. I don't think that, first of all, even assuming, as I just indicated, that that would be the most narrow condition of probation, that wouldn't necessarily make the condition that was imposed here invalid. But in the second place, I don't think that would necessarily work, because even if the defendant were to tell somebody of his predicament, the woman could say, well, I don't care. We've got welfare.
She could say, I'm a multimillionaire and I can support the kids and I don't need him.
Or she could say, we've got welfare, I can have a kid, I'll just go on welfare.
We have workfare.
Well, now we have workfare, but...
And I'm willing to work.
And I'm willing to work at a minimum wage job or
whatever.
I'm
not going to ask for support.
Well, she's probably going to ask for support on top of it. But at any rate, it's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee that we aren't going to have another child who is not going to be supported by his father.
You know, by putting him in prison, none of these women have their children supported, right?
That's exactly what his first wife said, as was reported in the paper yesterday.
And that's what the brief also says.
And that is absolutely true, that putting someone in prison for not supporting their children absolutely has to be a last coercive resort. It's because, as you say, you don't support your kids while you're in children. The only reason for doing it is to have the deterrent effect, is to say to somebody, look, you better support your kids, or this is what's going to happen to you.
Well, here the judge did that, and he went one further, and he tried to devise what at least you articulate as a relatively narrow condition. Now, your opposing counsel indicates that this is a fundamental, and I wrote it absolutely right, pages before I wrote down, he thought it was qualified, but is it really? And then he came back and said it's an absolute fundamental right, one that the judge could do nothing about.
Well, it is unquestionably a fundamental right. No one denies that, but the U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly said that, like any other constitutional right, the right to procreate is not absolute, and the state can impose restrictions on it as long as the restrictions are reasonable and narrowly drawn to serve a compelling state interest.
Counsel, one of the most difficult cases I had as a circuit court judge involved this woman that I'd meet on the street all the time, and she was very articulate, but must have been very abused as a child because she was so emotionally impaired, and I think maybe borderline intelligence, and drank. She obviously had an alcohol problem. And she would have children. She would meet up with these guys, I suppose, at some bar, and she'd bring these children into the world. And one after the other, they had extreme problems, taken away from her virtually right away, placed in some home, and as they, you know, grew, I mean, just emotional and physical problems. She was also, lots of times I'd have her in on kind of theft charges, you know, just kind of disorderly conduct charges. Would it have been appropriate for me, let me change that, would it have been legal for me on some of these charges that involve her drinking to make as a condition of bond or of probation that she cannot procreate?
Well, no. The case law that we have, and there's not a whole lot of it, but there is a significant body of case law out there that pretty much unanimously says that if you're going to impose a condition like this, it has to be reasonably related to the crime.
I mean, reasonably related, I can make some kind of a trail. That is, she gets drunk, she ends up spending the night with someone and has a child. I mean, it all ties in. And, you know, child after child. And just like this judge, you know, what's the circuit court judge to do? And yet, I don't know what makes that case different than this case, assuming some kind of rational relationship.
What makes that case different from this case is that this case involves a conviction for failing to support children, and the condition which was imposed on the defendant's probation directly addresses the criminal conduct, which is failing to support children. The condition of probation is don't have another kid you can't support.
But she didn't support her children either, and wasn't terminated oftentimes until later on, you know, 5, 6 years old. If she had been prosecuted for non-support, would it have been legal for me to impose this condition?
Yes. Yes, just like in the present case.
Let me, may I change the facts a bit? Mm-hmm. Suppose that she had been prosecuted and convicted for child abuse or child endangerment. Would you then say that no more children?
I would say yes. The case law says...
The state v. Pointer says no.
The case law says no.
The case law says no. Indeed, my question is, and therefore your response to Justice Bradley should be the same. If you cannot take away the right of procreation when you have child abuse or child endangerment, which was the California rule, then how can you take away the right to procreate for merely not paying money?
I think those, the cases that...
And let me finish. And why would the rule be any different for a woman than a man?
Well, to answer your second question, I don't think the rule would be any different.
Of course. So now tell us why you would distinguish
the child,
these cases.
In the child abuse cases, I think the appropriate analysis of why this kind of condition is inappropriate in that kind of case is not the first part of the analysis, is not the question of whether the condition is reasonably related to the crime, because I think it is in
sure.
the case of child abuse. The problem is that in the case of child abuse, there are other ways of dealing with the situation to prevent the new child from being abused. I mean, one
and
of
the most narrowly tailored? What?
Well, there are...
No, you're not going to say the most
Not
narrowly,
the most
of course.
Narrowly tailored, but there are ways of doing it
like
that
what?
Are reasonable and that are more narrow than preventing
like
procreation. Well, one of them would be to require the child abuser to undergo some kind of psychiatric testing and counseling.
Do you think Mr. Oakley needs that?
My own personal opinion is yes, I do.
Okay, so that's one more narrowly tailored.
Well, only if it would work. Only
well,
if
we never know that until after we try it. Has it been tried?
Well, I
you don't know.
Okay, that I don't know, okay. And that's another. Okay, that's another.
Another narrow tailored restriction. Okay.
That's another issue that we.
Do you have any case, in which male or female, where a court is upheld? Even as restricting, that is eliminating the right of procreation.
No, of course I don't.
You don't have any case anywhere in the country?
No.
But there are cases that say you can't do it.
Yes.
Okay.
But only,
so what is the state standing on, Mr. Ballastieri?
But those cases only say you can't do it on the facts of those particular cases. I have found no case that says you can't do it, period.
That of course, every case depends on the facts, but the fact of a child abuser strikes me as much more serious than, and I'm not going to defend either one, obviously, than a lack of paying money.
Well, I agree with you.
Okay.
And I frankly think those cases that say you can't impose this kind of a condition on a child abuser are wrong. I just have to point out to you that they're there.
Okay. Where is Mr. Oakley imprisoned?
My understanding, according to the article in the paper the other day, is
we
that...
We get our news, our legal information from the newspaper. Go ahead.
Well, I talked to Carrie Siegel.
seated behind you, yes.
The newspaper reporter who did a pretty thorough job of examining this, and I assume he's right when he says that...
Where is he? I'm sorry, I didn't read the part of the article. What?
I assume he was right. I assume
where is he?
He's out on the street.
He's out on the street. Okay.
Yeah, he's been released.
So what are we fighting about? Is he on probation?
He's on probation.
Okay, but he's not in prison.
But he's not in prison.
Because I was going to make a brilliant argument that the state ought to release him because it costs more to keep him in prison. The state ought to pay the money for the children. But that argument fails at the moment.
At the moment, yes.
Okay, but tomorrow's another day.
Mr. Balestrieri, could the state impose as a condition of probation that prior to any sexual intercourse, that Mr. Oakley would have to inform the woman of his past, and that he has had 9 children, that he has failed to support them, and that he's been convicted of failure to support X number of times?
I think that would be a permissible condition of probation, yes.
Well, why wouldn't that be a condition in a case like this as a substitute to forbidding procreation? I mean, it seems to me that if he's going to follow one order, he'd follow the other, and they both might be effective.
Well, no, as I indicated to Justice Abrahamson earlier, just telling the woman that he's a deadbeat dad isn't necessarily going to prevent them from having another child. She could just say, well, I don't care if you're a deadbeat dad. That's fine with me. We'll just have a kid, and we'll let the state worry about supporting the kid, and let's just go ahead and do it anyway. So there's no guarantee with that kind of a condition of probation that the evil the state wants to prevent here and for which Mr. Oakley was convicted and imprisoned is not going to happen again.
Mr. Balestrieri, I suspect one concern here would be going beyond the rather extreme facts of this case. Some people might say, well, maybe it was all right here, but we wouldn't want this to happen every day in all kinds of different cases. How do you address that?
I would absolutely agree. I would absolutely agree that we would not want this to happen in every single case. We would not want this to become the rule rather than the exception. And I think the answer to that is that conditions of probation, not just this probation, but any probation, have to be carefully tailored to the particular facts of that particular case. And as you indicated, this is an extreme case. This calls for extreme measures. The ordinary case of non-support is not extreme, does not call for extreme measures. And I'd probably be the first to concede that in the ordinary non-support case, a condition such as this would not fly.
Well, let me just give you a hypothetical. I have 9 kids here, let's say 4 kids, $25,000 behind 4 kids. Is that an appropriate condition?
I don't think you can just look at the number of kids or the amount that's behind. I think you have to look at the whole situation. I think you have to look at how likely is it that when this defendant is convicted of non-support, he's going to learn his lesson and that he's going to realize that he has to support his kids, that if he doesn't support his kids, he's committing a crime, and that if he continues to fail to support them, he's going to be committing another crime. And if he is subject to rehabilitation, then we don't need this kind of extreme condition of probation on him.
Why isn't it sufficient just to continue to prosecute him for felony non-support if he continues to violate the law?
Because I think that's more extreme than what we've done here.
It's pretty extreme for the state to tell somebody how many kids they can have, right? Well, you would concede that that's an extreme sort of thing for the state.
If you put him in jail, you are telling him...
To take him out of circulation, right.
You are telling him, no kids, no nothing. So that's more extreme. than what we've done here.
Incarcerating somebody is a conventional method of dealing with criminal behavior.
And that is the most extreme method of dealing with criminal behavior. What we have done here by putting this condition on his probation is less extreme than putting him in jail for another 8 years. What we have tried to do here, what Judge Hazelwood has tried to do here, is set up a system whereby hopefully Mr. Oakley can be rehabilitated without the need of putting him in jail for another 8 years, leaving him out on the street where he can work and hopefully support his kids, but yet tried to condition that liberty on not having any more kids in the meantime. So this is in fact a less restrictive means of dealing with Mr. Oakley's problem than incarcerating him for the full term that he could have been incarcerated.
Counsel, it's all relative, I suppose, what's less restrictive, but what hits me in your response is when I read the newspaper articles about China, I don't hear so much about someone being incarcerated and, oh, my goodness, that's how restrictive. I sense and feel appalled at rules that exist that you can only have a certain number of children, whether it be China or some other countries, a certain number of children, because the state has a compelling interest that you only have one child, and that to have more than one child, there would be tremendous consequences. I'm appalled at that. I think that separates... that separates our values, our values and our foundations of moral integrity. I mean, that's the way that I see it. And I'm not sure others agree, but I am appalled by a state regulation that says you can only have one child. Now, and apparently, I'm not quite as appalled by putting people in jail because all of the circuit court judges have had that as part of their daily fare.
Well, we're not telling Mr. Oakley that he can only have one child. He's already...
He didn't say he had more children.
Well, he's had nine.
Well, you know...
He's had nine, but one, but
nine. What if he were behind... $25,000, and that's not hard to get behind $25,000. What if he were behind $25,000 and had two children?
Well, it's like I said when I was answering Justice Prosser's question, we have to take into consideration the facts of all of the facts involved in the particular case. And you can't just put a number on it. You can't say one kid, no more. Two kids, no more. Is this? There's no question. I understand where you're coming from in saying that this is a fundamental right. Nobody disagrees with that. Nobody disagrees that the ability to procreate is a fundamental right. But there's another right that's operating here, and that's the right of the children. Don't they have rights too? I think they do. I think that the children have rights to a reasonable upbringing and enough money to grow up in a decent home with decent food, with decent clothing, and get a decent education. I think that's a right, too. And
now that gets you an awfully slippery slope. I mean, as a circuit court judge, I guess I lowered my expectations and said a child has a right to be safe. Child doesn't have a right to have intelligent parents. A child doesn't have a right to have parents that can send them to nice schools or have nice meals. A child has a right to be safe. I mean, that's, you know.
A child doesn't have a right to be brought up in River Hills or some other posh suburb. But there is a basic threshold of needs that I think are basic human rights for all children. Doesn't have to have the best clothes. Doesn't have to have an Armani suit, you know, or whatever, whoever our fashion designers invoke, but you have to have some kind of decent clothing. You have to have a warm winter coat. And you don't necessarily have to eat pâté de foie gras, but you have to have some decent food. You have to have health care. I think that's a basic human right, too. And those human rights clash in a case like this.
Mr. Balistrieri, getting back to trying to narrowly draw this, it appears to me that the condition of probation doesn't leave any light. It's closed off all doors. I'm looking for ways to make a little light, maybe if for nothing else than so that a reviewing court of us could say, well, it's okay. Now, what about this restriction? Instead of simply eliminating or prohibiting him from having the procreate, why not make him go to the judge, just as we did in Krebs, to get permission to procreate?
Well, that is the condition of probation here.
Well, that the judge himself?
The judge himself can, if Oakley is able to show
support
that he is going to support a child, he can have one. The prohibition against procreation is not absolute. It only relates to children that aren't going to be supported. So if he can say, look, I found this wonderful job. I'm working 40 hours a week. I'm not visiting the tavern. First wife says he used to. I'm going to support this kid. I'm going to do everything possible.
That's regardless of the past 9 kids.
Well, he's got to support the 9 kids, too.
So he's got to be able to support all 9 before he can have 10.
He's got to support all 10, let's put it that way, yeah. He's already got the obligation to support 9. He's already had court orders. Well,
they've already conceded he's not going to be able to do that.
Well, they claim he's not going to be able to do that.
Well, the judge says so. You're going to struggle to make 25 or 30,000.
Yeah, struggle is one thing.
To make that much. And then the question is, can you support 9 or 10 children on $25,000 or $30,000?
I assume with great difficulty.
Counsel, there's a Blackie case dealing with a Wisconsin case, federal court. That wasn't dealing with the fundamental right to procreate, but rather, of course, the right to marry. And the court said that Wisconsin couldn't impinge on that fundamental right the way that it was trying to do. And then it continued around page 390 of saying, look, the court said, look, there are other ways of accomplishing child support. The law, the Zablocki case, was if you weren't supporting your children, you couldn't get married. I mean, that's shorthand. So there are some similarities here. If you can't support your child, you can't procreate. And the court set out examples of less restrictive means that the state has available to accomplish supporting children. It said that there are other effective ways that do not impinge upon the right to marry. Under Wisconsin law, support obligations may be enforced directly via wage assignments. You can go after the person under civil contempt. You can do criminal penalties. Justice Sykes mentioned that. You can adjust the criteria used for determining the amounts to be paid. I mean, all of those options were available in order to get child support paid that were less restrictive than impinging on the fundamental right to marry, as the Wisconsin statute were doing. Why isn't that applicable here?
My answer to that is that all of those means of collecting a support are available hypothetically. Question is, are they available in this case? And this is something this is a gap in my brief that I think I would like to fill in at this point. And that's the question of who's got the burden of proof here. Who's got the burden to show that other means of enforcing child support obligations are not sufficiently workable. And I couldn't find any case that directly deals with this question. But I think this is analogous to the typical sentencing cases, since the imposition of probation and the terms of probation, the conditions of probation, is part of the sentencing process. It's also an exercise of discretion by the trial court. And I would think that the typical rule that applies in sentencing cases as to who has the burden of proof would also apply to conditions of probation. The rule in sentencing cases is there's a presumption that a sentence is reasonable, and the defendant who is attacking the sentence has the burden to show that the sentence, or in this case, the condition of probation, is unreasonable. Now, we have a problem with the record in this case. We have a very small, narrow record because there was a guilty plea, so we never litigated the whole issue of what are the circumstances here. I think that a defendant who comes into court and says that this condition of probation is not sufficiently narrow has the burden to establish the facts which show that the condition is too broad. We don't have those facts established here.
Counsel, in ordinary constitutional law cases, once you show it's a fundamental right, who has the burden to show to satisfy the strict scrutiny standard? Once you show that the state has a compelling interest, but that you've got a fundamental right, doesn't the state have the burden to show that they've drafted a narrowly tailored remedy?
I haven't found any case law that specifically addresses that issue either. I would suggest that perhaps the usual rule that applies to construction of statutes or the constitutionality of statutes would apply, that there's a presumption of constitutionality and that the defendant has the obligation to overcome that.
Counsel? Even with strict scrutiny, I'm mm-hmm. surprised.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Counsel, other members of the court may want to flip back to this, so I have only one question on the third issue, and that is this plea and then the withdrawal of the plea agreement and then the subsequent one. The question I have is this. If after the circuit court permitted the state to withdraw from the first plea agreement, could Oakley have immediately appealed that decision?
He could have appealed it, not as a matter of right.
Not as a matter of right.
But certainly he could have appealed it as an interlocutory appeal. The situation
was... As I understand it, he did not, correct?
He did not.
Okay. That answers my question.
Well, this would have been an interlocutory appeal. I just want to point out that this would have been very analogous to the situation where a defendant claims double jeopardy, the issue being that he should not be tried at all, and the trial itself is the injury. Those kind of interlocutory appeals are usually heard.
Now, what about double jeopardy here? When did it attach? When did jeopardy attach?
When he entered his plea, and the plea was accepted by the court.
That's right. So, and at that time,
the first plea.
I'm talking about the first plea. He pled.
Right.
Pled to the one count. Six right. counts were dismissed. Right.
Yeah.
Jeopardy attached.
No question.
Those counts were dismissed on the merits.
At that point, yeah.
At that point. Under what authority does the court have to reinstate dismissed counts that had been dismissed on the merits and to say that they won't accept a plea agreement and withdraw the plea after jeopardy is attached and the defendant objects?
Waiver. Waiver is the answer.
Is this a jurisdictional issue? Where is the jurisdiction?
No, it's not jurisdictional.
Court? Why not?
It's not jurisdictional. Defendant can waive his right. Can waive his any objection to double jeopardy. Double jeopardy does not go to the jurisdiction of the court. It doesn't deprive the court of the right to hear the case?
To bring back dismissed charges.
Sure. If the defendant agrees to it, why not? There's no bar.
So your position, the defendant agreed, intelligent voluntary waiver represented by counsel?
Absolutely.
and so cleans up the whole record. Also agreed not to appeal.
Also right? agreed not to appeal.
Just wipes out everything.
Absolutely.
All rights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He didn't have to do it. He could have insisted on his right to pursue the his challenge to the breach of the plea agreement. He chose not to do it. That was his choice. He has to live with it. My time is up. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Balistrieri. Mr. Kay.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief here, just to go back to some of the points that were discussed earlier. It goes to the question about whether a person convicted of child abuse should have this restrictive condition of probation placed on him. And other courts, most notably in Florida, in the Rodriguez versus State case, which is actually cited in the Attorney General's brief, indicates that for such a situation, restricting a person's right to procreate is unconstitutional. There is some authority for that out there. With respect to trying to get a narrower type of a condition, I suppose that having Mr. Oakley inform future women or future girlfriends of this of his predicament would be acceptable. That would be something that is information that is shared and readily ascertainable and could be disseminated, and would not be a constitutional problem. But the problem with this is that and the state agrees this is a fundamental right. It derives from constitutional authority, and the state has no business to regulate, and the circuit court judge has no business regulating how that right is exercised. Now I just want to jump quickly up to the plea bargain scenario. In all of this understanding and all of these things that were briefed, the whole idea of the plea bargain was that, according to State versus Bex, a plea bargain can be withdrawn prior to the entry of a plea. And in this case, the plea bargain was withdrawn after the entry of the first plea. And because of that, he was forced to negotiate a second plea bargain, maybe not to his liking, but that was something that he was forced into. He did not waive that right per se, because it still smacks of a procedural due process argument. He wasn't treated fairly and the same as other individuals, and therefore you cannot waive a federal or you cannot waive a claim for a constitutional violation, and that's how we argued it in our brief to get around the cases cited that entering a guilty plea and a contest plea waives that argument entirely. So,
Mr. Kay, what kind of a father is Mr. Oakley?
Judge, I really don't know. I mean, I don't think that's in the record, and personally, I don't know. I could only speculate, but I mean, as a taxpayer, we all have certain concerns, but we are not talking about funding issues. We're not talking about a person's ability to pay. We're talking about something of a constitutional magnitude, and this condition of probation just goes too far.
There is no indigency defense to a felony non-support case, right?
Correct.
Has that ever been challenged?
I have not researched that issue, but I...
once the support order is on the record that the defendant has to pay X amount per month, the non-support cases are generally very cut and dry legally and
correct.
Factually. So there are very few defenses other than, they miscalculated the amount or something like that.
Right. And I've had some where we've argued about the amount of restitution, whether it should be $8,000 versus $4,000, but
That's a calculation issue, whether they've kept their, whether the county's kept the proper records about his payment history, usually.
Right.
That may be a new form of debtor prison?
Could be. You know, with our new computer system, there are quite a few non-support cases that are being prosecuted, and with the central computer system, there is a better way of tracking deadbeat fathers and mothers.
I mean, the mechanism, the procedural mechanism for getting the support obligation modified is in the family court, to go back to the family court judge to reopen the question of the amount of support that's owed. But typically, once the order is in place, there is usually no defense, indigency or otherwise,
right,
to non-payment.
Correct. Back to a percentage guideline or a amount per week or something like that, or...
Justice Babbitt had a question, counsel.
Yes,
counsel, I think you were asked this early in the argument, but maybe you've had more time to think about it. And if you weren't asked it, or if you were and I missed the answer, I apologize. Okay, you object to the framing of the imposition of no procreation. I think there is a compelling state interest here in with respect to the children, as outlined by the state. Now, assuming for the moment that there is a compelling state interest, and I think you've conceded that now, is there any words that you could draft that would fulfill that compelling state interest without being overly restrictive in your judgment?
I can't think of an example right now, but the compelling state interest, and I would still concede, would be to protect the children's best interests, but there are other mechanisms.
Well, that's what I'm asking. What is the substitute for what the state has done here? What do you think is an acceptable substitute that would fulfill the state's compelling interest in its children, and at the same time not unduly infringe upon a constitutional right?
All the circuit court judge had to do for a condition of probation was simply insert that he must be current on his child support obligations, and he must be...
Before he can procreate?
As a condition of probation.
That scarcely fulfills the state's... Given his history, that seems to not at all come close to fulfilling the state's... compelling interest. I mean,
well, I, you know,
I guess what you're saying is there are none. Huh?
There should not be any on the procreation issue.
What about the Zablocki things? I mean, I thought that would be your answer.
Well,
I thought the court's already answered that for you.
Right. Those are the wage assignment, liens, contempt proceedings, and as a condition of probation, the judge could have ordered that as a condition of probation to be current with his child support orders.
I hear no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Kay. Thank you, Assistant Attorney General Balestrieri, for an excellent argument on a case that presents difficult legal issues. That closes our hearing on 99-3328.